there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back, listeners, to another Horror for the Holidays stocking stuffer. Today, Jay Logster and I will discuss new films.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, too.
Oh, yeah, and I'm Jeff Searcy.
Yeah, he's Jeff Searcy. I'm whoever Jay Logster in. That's right.
Yeah, he's that guy. You know, Jay, I almost didn't make it here today because when I stepped out of my house, there was an old lady in a chair in my yard.
What'd she do, Jeff?
Not a whole lot, turns out.
Yeah. We kind of divided and conquered, I think is the best way to put it. We saw one movie the same. And then we saw one movie the same, and then we each saw one movie different. So Jeff's going to talk about The Woman in the Yard. Then we're both going to talk about Death of the Unicorn, and then I'm going to talk about Hell of a Summer. So, Jeff, why don't you kick us off?
Well, I called it Old Lady in the Yard so much that when I went to search for tickets, that's what I put in, and nothing came up.
Oh, geez.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's not actually called Old Lady in the Yard. But, you know, Jay, some people have said that The Woman in the Yard is a psychological horror thriller that is very atmospheric. And then there are people who have seen the movie.
Every review I've seen is just people like, what the fuck did I... Like, this is fucking bad. Why am I watching this?
Nobody, I don't think, understands why this movie was made. Least of all, the people actually making it. And it's got some of the weirdest cinematography I've ever seen. Like, you know what a Dutch angle is, right?
Yes.
Well, take a Dutch angle and just mangle it completely, and that's how half the movie is shot. It literally, I was starting to make me feel like sick watching this movie. The camera angles were so bad. I mean, honestly, you know what this felt like to me? It's like somebody was trying to rip off the Babadook, like the generational trauma thing. And they just like totally didn't understand what they were trying to do at all. And so they're like, hey, I'll make an old lady sit out in the yard. And, you know, she does creepy things like comes up to the window and says, today's the day.
And maybe like a fly crawls across the veil on her face or something.
Oh, yeah, all kinds of creepy stuff, Jay. You know how flies love to crawl across spooky stuff.
Yeah, oh, they love it. They can't get enough of it, flies.
She's going to tap on the window, too. But this is a movie, it's one of those like movies that feels almost like overstuffed, where too much stuff happens for a movie of its length, but it also feels incredibly boring. Like, there's so much stuff going on all the time and so many different plot threads going on all the time, but it also feels like none of it matters at all. Because, I mean, this has possession, demons, time travel anomalies, also an undercurrent of grief, and, like, Babadook-style dealing with loss themes thrown in to these three competing stories. And you know how there's slow burn movies, but this is one of those slow burn movies that the burn never actually happens. The bomb never goes off, Jay. It was a slow burn, and then it ended. It's kind of almost as bad for me as The Wolfman, I will say. Although, I can't say it's quite as bad as Wolfman, because there is, in fact, an old woman in a yard in this movie.
Oh, it's not some, like, weird disease that makes an old woman appear in a yard?
Yes, it's not rabies that makes this old woman act crazy in a yard. And the ending, like, answers no questions at all. It's one of those movies where you watch it and go, well, I think I understand less about this than I did at the beginning. And it doesn't... For this movie being called The Woman in the Yard, The Woman in the Yard almost feels like an afterthought about halfway through the movie. Because it's never actually made clear if the woman in the yard is causing all the crazy things happening in the house, or if they're imagining the crazy things happening in the house, or if the old woman in the yard is her from the future because of the temporal anomaly thing that they go into. Which, you know, that's what I love in the middle of my weird horror movie. I love them to go into like a sci-fi explanation of what's going on. Well, you see, it could be that a temporal anomaly has formed in the house and we're overlapping your grief-stricken future with your current existence, Jay. But honestly, this movie really feels like it's one of those bite off more than it can chew style things for a director, where the director's like, I can make a really cool film about trauma and mix it into a horror movie that'll get people to come in and see it. And then no one sees it because the reviews are so bad.
Oh, no, it got, like, I saw that it was like, they had to hide the reviews online or they had to, like remove the reviews until after release.
They were trying to censor earlier reviews, yes. And because, see, and that shows me that they clearly thought that this movie was going to be much better than it was because they allowed early reviews. Generally, if they know a movie is crap, they don't allow that.
Blumhouse is just dropping the ball, all the time now.
I mean, I can understand. Honestly, this movie feels more like an A24 movie than a Blumhouse movie.
It's Blumhouse trying to make an A24, yes, based off what you're telling me.
I think, honestly, it would have done better as an A24 movie because the kind of people who go to see those movies, I don't think, are always the kind of people going to see Blumhouse movies. And I know I definitely expect different things from those two studios. Like, when I'm going to A24, I'm expecting, like, a more thoughtful movie and probably a slower paced movie. When I go to a Blumhouse movie, I'm expecting an Imthrigan
or an Insidious, yes, or whatever.
Something that's got some fun in it. You know, it's going to be a horror movie, even if it has like a deeper theme, kind of like the childhood trauma theme in Insidious. It still has the boogly demon.
Yeah, the lipstick guy is standing there. I've not seen it, but one of the things I heard, and maybe you can vouch for this, is the third act. It really does kind of pick it. Like, it's like the first two, like the two thirds of the movie, like the first two thirds are just slow and kind of pointless. Yes. And then people are like, it picks up in the third act, but that doesn't mean it's good, was kind of the general consensus I got. They're like, it's still bad. It's just all the exciting stuff happens in the last third of the movie.
Yes. Well, I pulled a review, Jay, a 0-star review.
Oh boy.
By yours truly, of course.
Oh, excellent.
I didn't know if you knew this, but I actually do write some internet movie reviews.
Oh, excellent.
Can you guess what my screen name is?
No, I can't.
Ghost of Roger Ebert. I'm correcting his mistakes.
Brilliant.
So this was my review I wrote for Letterboxd of The Woman in the Yard. The Woman in the Yard is a cinematic disaster masquerading as elevated horror. I went in expecting a slow burn psychological movie with some Blumhouse elements thrown in for fun. What I got was a chaotic mashup of supernatural tropes, cryptic metaphors, and the worst narrative structure I've seen in a movie in years. But this was before I had viewed Peter Rottentail, by the way. The first act sets up an eerie mystery. A silent woman appears in the backyard and just stands there. Creepy, right? But instead of building suspense or giving her any coherent purpose, the film starts hurling every horror idea it can find. Shadow demon, ghost possessions, mirror worlds, random flashback revelations that come out of nowhere and cut out of the main timeline. By the time the movie was juggling metaphysical realms and retroactive child kidnapping lore, I had completely checked out. According to Mashable's review, the movie zigzags right off the rails, and that's putting it too kindly. It tries to be too many things. A metaphor for grief, a psychological breakdown, a supernatural thriller, and some weird anti-phone PSA. There's a big undercurrent of, like, don't use your cell phone in this movie. The rules of the world seem to change scene to scene, and by the third act, you no longer understand what's happening or care. Yes, Danielle Deadwyler gives a solid performance. And the cinematography is pretty good, if a little off-putting. But you can't polish a narrative this fundamentally broken. There's no emotional payoff, no coherent threat, and no consistency. It's just vibes. Confusing, inconsistent, frustrating vibes. If this is the future of Blumhouse horror, I think we're in trouble. My final verdict, 1-star. Should have left the woman in the script drawer. And there you go. Now let's hear about Jay's experience with Death of a Unicorn.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let's, I was kind of excited.
I was too.
Jenna Ortega, love a movie with Jenna Ortega in it. I'll go to bat for Paul Rudd. I love Paul Rudd movies. And you know, and I was kind of excited. A24 film, strangely enough, yep. like we were talking about. And I thought looked creepy based off the trailers. I was kind of interested. And it wasn't bad. Like I've seen some people shitting on it online.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, it's all right. Like,
you know what my reaction was? I was like, did this studio switch movies and just not tell anybody? Because this felt more like a Blumhouse movie, and The Woman in the Yard felt more like an A24 movie.
It has a very like Alien Prometheus kind of storyline with a group of billionaires, you know, oh, we can cure every disease with these unicorns.
Of course.
And, you know, but we're going to keep it for ourselves and only use it for our rich benefactor friends. We're not going to use it to, you know, save everybody. We're not going to use it to keep everybody alive. We're only going to use it on ourselves. Which, like, okay, like, I completely get the story you're trying to tell, but Alien does such a better job of, like, the evils of capitalism.
Yeah.
Than Death of a Unicorn did, which was, you know, heavy-handed and very, very blatant what it was doing. And I don't know, maybe in times like these where people are misunderstanding films, maybe they needed the heavy-handedness of Death of a Unicorn.
Yeah, that's kind of, I'm always kind of torn on that. It's like, if you're too heavy-handed, it feels off-putting. But if you're not heavy-handed enough, then people are stupid and don't understand the movie.
And so, yeah, so like, I you know, I was sitting there, I was like, it's just a heavy-handed alien, but I'm like, but maybe that's what idiot people need to understand, like, what aliens are. But I'm even down to, like, a evil corporation trying to get a hold of this mythical creature that can kill people. I mean, I guess in Alien's case, it's more the perfect weapon designed for killing.
Well, I mean, it's basically a mythical creature at that point.
Yep,
it's and, like an evolved space species.
Yep, and you know, oh, we're going to get our hands on this and use it for our own means. Like, I thought that was kind of neat. And I saw a lot of parallels. I thought Paul Rudd was pretty good in it. I thought Jenna Ortega was pretty good in it. I thought the shitty son of the rich family was fucking hilarious. He was really good.
I'd say the acting really wasn't the problem in this movie, I would say. I think it's just more, like you said, it's pretty heavy-handed and a pretty stock anti-corporate greed story. It almost felt kind of like a modern fairy tale type thing, where it's like a corporation. It's kind of like a different retelling of The Lorax, almost.
And the CGI, I thought, was not great. I thought the unicorns didn't look great, and that was a little disappointing.
Yeah, it was kind of disappointing, especially with it being an A24 movie. You're used to like a higher standard of quality, and this one didn't. Like I said, this felt more like a Blumhouse movie.
I kind of agree with you. Like having not seen Woman in the Yard, I did kind of feel like, but kind of based off what you said, like it does kind of feel like they kind of swapped these two movies around.
I almost wonder if they were like, let's swap movies and see if anybody notices.
speaking of Blumhouse, real fast, quick detour. M3GAN 2.0 trailer, what'd you think?
The bitch is back.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I'm ready.
M3GAN 2.0 looks like what M3GAN is to Terminator, what M3GAN 2.0 is to Terminator 2.
Yes. I mean, it's going to be epic. It's probably going to be my favorite movie.
Oh, my God. It's she's big now. Oh, yes. My God.
She flies now, Jay.
They're big now? She's tall now?
They're big now.
They're tall now? They're tall now. They're tall now.
Hey, sorry for strangling you and almost burning down the lab. No hard feelings, right?
And I loved like they like trapped her in like a little like Amazon Echo thing. Yeah, I thought that was great. I'm very excited for M3 2.0.
I'm very hyped for that. Almost as hyped as I am because, you know, I'm a dinosaur guy for the new Jurassic Park movie.
Almost as hyped as I am for Final Destination 6.
Bloodlines.
Exciting.
Yeah, movies are always good when they're called Bloodlines,
too. Yeah, there's never been a bad movie with Bloodlines as the subtitle.
Not once.
Last but not least, Hell of a Summer.
It was a hell... Oh, now, I have to preface this by saying I was shocked by Jay Logsdon's review of this because he has a burning hatred for Finn Wolfhard.
I do hate Finn Wolfhard. I assume it's because I hate Mike in Stranger Things. But, man, he's insufferable in that. And I've not seen the new Ghostbusters movies, but one of the reasons is because I don't want... Like, I'll go see a movie because Paul Rudd's in it. I will also not go see a movie because Finn Wolfhard's in it.
Nice.
And but the trailer, like, I'd seen a couple trailers and I was like, this looks like fun. I was hell of a summer. There were enough things where I was like, damn it, I might go see this movie. It's just one of those things where, like, you see the trailer. I assume you've seen the trailer for it.
Yes. At least.
There's like a moment where like the kid's like, well, mom, like, here I am. And she's like, get a job. And she speeds off or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, this does have some humor about it. Like, this might actually be good. And then, you know, you see, oh, it's by Finn Wolfhard and Bill Brick or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this might suck. And I was just kind of on the fence about going to see it. And then I saw a trailer that was an homage to Happy Birthday to Me. And I went, God damn it, I'm going to go see Hell of a Summer on opening day. And I did. My general thoughts are, I thought this was a pretty fun slasher summer movie. Pretty by the books, pretty normal. There was a moment, like, there was kind of an extended stretch in the middle where I was trying to kind of like do the thing where I'm like, okay, who's the killer? Like, based off of who we've met, who's the killer? And I had even come up with like a plot for like, oh, maybe the killer's someone we haven't met and they can kind of explain it away. But I had kind of started to peg it pretty early on, like once the killing started. And so overall, like, wasn't too impressed with kind of like where that was. It was very by the book. But like, I thought the lead actor, I think Jason is the character's name, I thought he was fucking hilarious. I thought he was so goddamn fun. I felt a lot of the things he did. I'm like, oh, I think I've done stuff like that. Like, just not reading social situations well. Like, not understanding, like, when, like, women are attracted to him. Like, I'm like, I've been there. Like, I've been there, Jason. You and me both, buddy. And honestly, like, I was like, there was a moment where I was like, fuck, of course, Finn Wolfhard makes himself like the cool dude driving a convertible. But then it's kind of like they dial it back a little bit and they're like, oh, actually, he's not cool. Like, he's not the cool one. He's trying to be cool, but he's not. And they kind of played with that a little bit, which I thought was fun. But I will say that, like, even with all that aside, even like with most of my admiration for Finn Wolfhard, where I was kind of like, you know what? Like, he didn't make himself the focal point. He didn't make himself like the cool dude or the main character. We did have to hear about how Finn Wolfhard can perform cunnilingus for like 2 hours and 8 minutes or something like that.
Wow.
So like, yeah. Oh no, Finn Wolfhard's not the cool dude, but don't worry. He can eat pussy like no one else. Like, mother, God damn it, Finn Wolfhard.
Oh wow. Finn Wolfhard. I can chew gum too. Wow.
Like, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that, I literally said to my wife afterwards, I'm like, that was the thing where I was like, oh, I was pretty impressed with Finn Wolfhard. And then they had to include, of course they had to include that.
Yep.
But it was, but otherwise, like, I thought his friend, I thought the co-writer was hilarious. I thought a lot of the cast was actually really good. They had a couple people where it's like, oh, I can't wait for them to die. And it was very satisfying when they died. They had like a fun mix of like campers. I really kind of enjoyed this movie overall. And honestly, like, it's not playing very many places. It's kind of one of those where it's like, I would recommend seeing it. It's not great. And like, it is a better script than I think like an Osgood Perkins movie. It is worse shot than an Osgood Perkins movie. So Neon, get Osgood Perkins to direct Hell of a Summer. Or to shoot for Hell of a Summer, but keep the script of Hell of a Summer.
That's what I'm saying. Osgood Perkins should be a director, but I don't think he should be a writer.
Like, that's how I felt. I left it, and I was like, yeah, like, for a Neon movie that, like, wasn't well shot, but that was a fun movie, maybe have Osgood Perkins film these movies and direct these movies, but don't write the scripts.
Well, Jay, have you ever considered that you're dead wrong?
Oh, I'm sure I am. I'm sure lots of people hated Hell of a Summer.
One star. Too predictably. Not predictable. Predictably.
Yep, too predictably.
The acting wasn't all that good. Not worth the watch. And if you want to see it, best wait till it comes to streaming. Streaming.
Streaming.
Uh-huh. One star. Dog shit. What else can I say? Worst movie I've watched in a while. Actors are all terrible. Script was complete horse shit. Save your money. 0 stars if I could. A 1 star. Very slow. Boring and too much talking. not enough action. Was a waste of time and money.
It's a slasher summer camp movie. You're not going to get like a shit ton of action.
Very let down. I was hopeful this would be good or at least funny, but it was neither. No thrills, no chills, no fun.
I agree. There weren't really like thrills or chills. Like it was, I wasn't like overly scary. I had fun, but two, there's like a whole subplot of like all the campers thinking Jason, the lead camp counselor, is the killer. Fucking hilarious. That like that, you know, 20 minutes of the film is some of my favorite shit in the whole movie.
I really wanted to give this Finn kid a chance since I liked him on Stranger Things. But the movie was so bad. Poor acting paired with a poor storyline. I'm not sure what kind of humor this was aiming for, but I did not find it funny. I was ready to walk out about halfway through, but I was hoping the ending would save it. This was a total waste of money and should have gone straight to streaming.
Oh, also Jason, the lead actor, is Craven's brother. Is the chameleon.
Yes. Craven the Hunter.
Yep. One and the same. What one and the same, Jeffrey?
Good.
It's me, Fat Russell Crowe, but I'm Russian.
Good. And
I got mauled by a bear.
And my final review. It's me, Dracula. In Silvers. If I fuck, I die.
I don't think that's exactly what happened, but sure.
I mean, he fucked and he died, Jay.
True, you're right. Count Orlok did fuck and then die.
I guess camp is anything badly written now. I felt like it was written by a child and everything was done in one take.
It was written by two children, in fact.
Every death happened suddenly and off screen. The jokes were boring. Everyone was so quiet and unimpressive. Finn Wolfhard's character was the worst. He was supposed to be funny, but completely lacked charisma and seemed only capable of reading what was on the cue cards in front of him without putting any heart into it. I don't know what Hollywood sees in this douchebag, but it ain't it, fam.
Oh, boy. It ain't it, fam.
It ain't it. I mean, I think Jay Logsdon would probably agree that Finn Wolfhard ain't it.
Yeah, Finn Wolfhard ain't it. That's for certain. But I enjoyed it well enough. Like, I thought it was a fun Friday morning romp. Like, yes.
I kind of figured I trust Jay Logsdon reviews more than I trust internet reviews, so I will probably check it out at some point.
Yeah, like I kind of agree with the people. Wait till it's on streaming, especially with how hard it is to watch. Like, I think it's one theater in our entire area. Like, I think it's just the Jordan Creek Theater. So yeah.
That was kind of why, because it was at Cinemark in Ames, but it was only there for like 3 days, and then they pulled it.
Yeah, I would just wait till it's on streaming. That's probably the best way to check it out. Well, Jeff, it's time to say goodbye. Goodbye, Ankeny Kirkendale Library. We're gonna say goodbye as we're getting ready to.
We're gonna close down here, Jay, and say goodbye to everything.
Yeah, we're gonna goodbye TV that we never turned on.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, old lady who sat at the front desk and thought we were making a blog.
Goodbye, glaring fluorescent lights that make us sad and depressed while we record here.
Goodbye, random people that walk by and look in at us like, what are those two fat guys doing?
Goodbye, surprisingly sturdy library chairs that held me up the entire time.
I was also impressed with the strength of these library chairs. Goodbye, nonfiction A114.6 GER through 909.08 AAR.
Goodbye, random woman working on her laptop.
But yeah, so we're gonna light this candle. We're gonna leave it burning as we exit the Ankeny Kirkendale Library one last time and start recording in our new recording space.
Ah, yes. Pay tribute to the King George III Library in the only way we know how, Jay. With a terrible BuzzFeed quiz to finish this out.
Oh, here. Match sound effect. Lighting candle sound effect.
Burning candle sound effect.
Yeah, this will come back later for a joke we're going to do in a little bit.
All right, Jay. What do you think is a proper way to carry us out of here? What kind of BuzzFeed quiz are you interested in this time?
One that's going to ask me what my favorite type of soup is. Pho, chili, chicken noodle soup, or ramen. Or some other soup is the fifth one.
Ah, some other soup. All right. Let's see here. Ooh, we got some good ones today. Whew. You know what? You're going to eat your way through a cupcake buffet to find out which movie final girl you are, Jay.
All right.
Here we go. Choose a cupcake. Chocolate, red velvet, caramel, or vanilla?
I guess out of those, I'd go caramel.
Mm, okay. Yeah, unconventional choice. Select another beauty. Lemon, chocolate mint, carrot cake, or strawberry?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think I do like lemon, but chocolate mint also sounds really good. I do like an Andes mint on occasion. I think I'm going to go lemon. Lemon's usually kind of my go-to cake flavor.
Every villain is lemons.
Every villain is lemons.
All right. You'll be in heaven with this next one, Jay.
All right.
Nutella, blue raspberry, rainbow, or Oreo?
Ooh. One, blue raspberry seems like a really weird cake flavor, doesn't
it? That does seem odd. It looks like blue raspberry frosting.
And I would assume rainbow is probably like not it's probably vanilla flavored just with rainbow food
coloring. That's what it looks like, yeah.
I'll go Oreo. That sounds pretty good.
All right. Your sweet tooth is going to be going wild, Jay. Gingerbread cupcake, cinnamon cupcake, s'more cupcake, or blueberry cupcake?
You know what? This is Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. This is a stocking stuffer, needs to be said. Let's go gingerbread. Why not?
All right, we're going gingerbread. Now choose a fun summer cupcake. Pink lemonade, mermaid, chocolate cherry, or watermelon?
What's a mermaid
cupcake? It's literally a picture of a woman on a rock, so.
The fuck?
You wanna eat some mermussy, Jay?
Oh, Jesus. Man, none of those sound appetizing. I guess chocolate cherry? None of those sound like good cupcake flavors.
All right, Jay, pick another flavor. Peanut butter, berry, black forest, or chocolate orange? Black forest ham cupcakes.
Oh, I love a black forest ham. Let's go peanut butter.
Okay. We ain't full yet, so keep choosing. Cute floral cupcakes, matcha green tea cupcakes, pink velvet cupcakes, or tiramisu.
What the fuck is a pink velvet? It's like a less red velvet cake?
It's a strawberry red velvet, apparently.
Oh, okay. What was the first one?
Cute floral cupcake.
Sure, why not? Cute floral cupcake.
Feeling cute.
I'm feeling cute. I'm a final girl. I'm cute and floral.
All right, now pick a fruity cupcake, Jay. Definitely gay. Reference to Peter Rottentail. Mango, apple, raspberry, or strawberry?
I bet if it's like an apple spiced cupcake, I bet that would be pretty good. I'll go with apple.
That does sound pretty good. All right. And finally, do you want a colorful chocolate cupcake, a strawberry lime cupcake, Easter decorated carrot cupcakes, or swirly mermaid cupcakes?
We're back to these mermaid. Let's go with the Easter. Why not? Let's go with an Easter cupcake. We're approaching Easter here.
All right.
Peter Rottentail season.
You are Nancy Thompson from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Solid. I'd be Nancy.
I see you, Queen. You're tough, driven, loyal, involved, competitive, and spontaneous. You're skilled and confident, which makes you the ultimate boss. Not to mention, you could be quite stylish.
Solid. I could go for that. I could see me being a Nancy.
Yeah, I could see that.
Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for bearing with us during the transition.
The library phase.
Yeah, we're exiting our library era.
Very cute. Very demure.
We get in touch with us on social media at Horror4Holidays, Horror4Holidays. Send us an email, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com.
0-star review for Horror for the Holidays. This is the anti-podcast.
YouTube, whatever, bell, thumbs up, subscribe, all that good shit. Podcatcher of choice, leave a review. Like Jeff said, 0 stars if you could.
YouTube.com/horrorfortheholidays, thumbs up, subscribe button, bell, do it all.
Oh, no, yeah. Leave a 5-star review and put, I'd give it 0 stars if I could. That'd be really fucking funny.
Yes, and we know you actually watch the show.
Yeah, otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week with Christmas Bloody Christmas, a movie I've been looking forward to for a while.
I've been looking forward to this.
So, anyway, thanks for listening. Goodbye, King George Library.
Goodbye.
Time to go.
God, can you believe the audience is finally gone?
Hey, Jeff, do you remember to blow that candle out?
Nah, I'm already too far away. You go blow it out.
No, forget about it. We'll get to it later. Oh,
how much damage could a candle possibly do?
News report here from Ankeny News, Ankeny One News. Two careless fat guys left a candle burning in the Ankeny Kirkendale Library and burned it to the ground. More at 5. Their podcast is terrible. All right, goodbye.
Goodbye.